بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم. الحمد لله رب العالمين، وسلم الله على سيدنا ونبينا محمد القاسم المصطفى محمد.
اللهم صل على محمد وعلى محمد
وعلى اهل بيته الاطيبين المنزلين، بهم نتولى ومن اعدائهم نتبرأ الى الله. اللهم كن لوليك الحجة ابن الحسن صلواتك عليه وعلى آبائه في هذه الساعة وفي كل ساعة، وليا وحافظا وقائدا وناصرا ودليلا وعينا، حتى تسكنه أرضك الأوعى وتمتعه فيها طويلا. We talked a bit about the importance of prayers and what prayers attract the mercy of Allah, and that there are prayers which are the true prayers and there are prayers which are the fake prayers. Now the fake prayers, which are the lookalike of a prayer, they do not attract the mercy of Allah, and the true prayers, which are the components that are sent to us through Rasulullah, by the Almighty Allah, we have to put all those components together, and when these components are put together, it attracts the mercy of Allah. Now the components of prayers are Takbiratul Ihram, the Surah, Surah Al-Hamd, Ruku, Sajda, Tashahhud, Salam. Each one of them, it is a pure and a tayyib component and element which has been sent for us, for our protection. Again, just some small reminders about this prayer. We are said that whenever you want to offer your prayers, offer them with an adhan, offer them with an iqamah. And someone who offers his prayers with an adhan, it is as if he has angels, two rows of angels standing behind him, with him, and the size of that row is from the east of this creation of Allah to the west. So much of reward for just an adhan if it is recited before the prayers. And again, the riwayat, it says that when it comes to the iqama, when you recite the iqama after adhan, one saf, one row of malaika with the same vastness will stand with you when you say the prayer. So all these are little gadgets that we have, or little tools that we have, attachments to the prayers, to make it weighty so that it elevates to the presence of Allah. And again, it is said that when you perform your sajda, perform it on the clay, which is from Karbala. Again, shocking riwayat, we have for this sajda to be performed on that clay of Karbala, says that if someone does do a sajda on that clay of Karbala, it enlightens the earth, the seven layers of the earth. That one sajda performed on that clay. Regular sajdas, you've done your duty, you performed it all. But to put weight in it, do it on that clay of Karbala, and that enlightens the earth, the seven layers of it. And another report says that the seven skies are enlightened by that one sajda on that crustal clay of Karbala. The reason for that is that sacrifice which Allah gave, as a result of that, everything changes, everything evolves, everything which is connected to Allah of Allah, it lives, it is alive. That's one. And again, in these elements of prayers that we have, if it is the Qiyam, when we stand and recite Surah Al-Hamd and the Surah, we have to stand as if we are facing and we are standing in the presence of Allah. That is, the body, soul, heart, mood, manners, everything has to be facing Qibla, not just the body that is wandering around. And says that when you are in ruku, your intention should be as such that you have bowed down before your master, and if that master beheads you, you are prepared for that. That has to be the intention of an individual when he bows down into the Ruku. And for Sajda says that that is the utmost or the peak of the khushu of a person, or the peak of submission and servitude of an individual, that he has submitted totally, wholly, solely to the presence of Allah. So these are things that we have to bear in mind when it comes to ruku, when it comes to sajda, and the positions, the postures a person has to observe throughout the prayers, from takbir to the salam, or the last takbir of the prayer. Allah has to exist in every component of it, in every element of it. And if it was mentioned yesterday that if someone performs one or two prayers throughout his lifetime which are correct, it attracts the mercy of Allah, and as a result of those one or two correct prayers which he had performed during his lifetime, all other 40 prayers that were performed by him during his life will all be uplifted and upgraded and will be accepted in the presence of Allah the Baraka wa Ta'ala. This one. And the second reminder, the days that we have, they are not equal. Not every day is the same as the other. Among the time, to certain times, to certain zaman, Allah has given a lot of importance. For example, among the month of Ramadan is the best. Among the days of the week, says, there's a time which starts from the sunset of Thursday and ends sunset of Friday. So these 24 hours, they are very special. They are not like the other days of the week. And for these 24 hours, our program, our schedule has to be different. And the teaching that we have says that when you say your Maghrib prayers on a Thursday, it should be different to every other day. If you recite Maghrib, recite it with Surah Al-Jumu'ah. The second rak'ah with Surah Al-A'la. And again, the presence of your mobile man should be different to every other day. But because the day is a very lofty day, Thursday. And then again it says that Thursday is the day of visitation and ziyarat of Allah Abdullah. That could be recited. And another teaching is Dua Kuwait. Dua Kuwait can be recited on a Thursday. Worships, recitals, a'mal for Thursday are a lot. And again when it comes to the Friday morning, says ghusl for the Friday, and someone who makes it a habit of performing this ghusl al-Jumu'ah on this Friday, says his body doesn't decompose after his death. And this is something that has been witnessed, that has been seen, people are present. As a result of that, and the riwayah also, some of them are so much amazing that says that if it was possible, I would have made this ghusl al-Jumu'ah wajib on my nation. It's so important. And then comes Dua Nutba. Again, day in, day out, there is that constant connection with the concept of imams. We cannot live without an imam. The teaching is that you must be reminded of the imam every now and then, and especially on a Friday, because Friday is the day of the 12th imam. It is the day of his arrival. If you see the dua that we have for Friday and the ziyarat after that, says that it is the day when imam will arrive, will return. If it's his day, everything should be special for that day. Dua Nutba, it's the dua of lamenting, crying, weeping, that we cry that, oh God, because this is that day this imam will come, and it has been the seerat and the attitude of the pious that they used to prepare themselves from early Fridays, whatever the means of defense and support they had was prepared, that if imam comes, they attend him, and they get to his service immediately. And after that comes the Friday prayers. After Friday prayers, you've got a dua, which is the salawat of Abu Hassan al-Zarra. And again, that is salutations to the Prophet, to his household, and one after the other, another reconfirmation of our aqidah with the concept of imamahs. And nearer to the sunset, says dua salawats. And in these 24 hours, if someone wasn't lucky enough to perform the amal one after the other, say it's just recite 100 salawats near to the sunset of Friday, and you get and you make up all the reward that you've lost in the past 24 hours. So these 24 hours that start from the sunset of Thursday till Friday are important, and we have to benefit from these opportunities that knock our doors day in, day out. As we do not know when this life that has been given to us by Allah will come to an end. So the more we benefit, the more we get, and the more we make best of these opportunities, it's going to be in our own benefit. Coming back to our topic, the perfect relationship that Allah and His awliya have created between them and the creation man, it's based on love. And this relationship is present from their part. He has done his job. Awliya, Maqsumeen, again, they have done their job. It's for us to set ourselves and to attract that love from that side. So the perfect and the best relationship is that which Allah has created, and that is based on love. So we have to try and do something that we tie the other end from our side. This is something which we see in Quran. We see that the first ayah in Quran is Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. That is, he starts with the name of his mercy, that is love. Now it is not as such that it's only the book of Allah which opens with that name of mercy and love. But the entire creation of Allah which he opens with that same formula, with the same basis of mercy and love. Says Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Ar-Rahman, Allam al-Quran, Khalaq al-Insan, Allamahu al-Bayan. So over there again, the entire opening is opened with that basis of mercy and love. So much love Allah has to His creation that He demurs Himself, brings Himself down so much that I'll quote an ayah that He says that by the right that man dhal ladhi yuqridu Allah qardan hasana. Now Allah, existence, who possesses everything, we are a creation and existence who possess nothing. And if we do possess anything, it is because Allah has bestowed that upon us. We haven't got anything of our own. Allah, because of that love He has, based upon that love He possesses, He in this ayah says that, is there anyone who can give a loan, a qarz to Allah? Now what have we done to Allah that He says, is there anyone who can give some loan to me, some qarz to me? What right do we have in Allah? Have we eased any of His tasks? No, we cannot. Have we helped Him in any aspect? We cannot, we did not. But still He brings Himself, He lowers Himself so much before His creation and says, man dhal ladhi yuqridu Allah qardan hasana. Is there anyone who could give Allah a loan, a qarz, a good qarz, fayudha'ifahu lahu? As a result of that qarz which you give to Allah, He says that I will multiply that. Not double it, multiply that. يُضَاعَفُ لَهُ بِكَثْرِهِ وَاللَّهُ يَقْبِضُ وَيَبْسُطُ إِلَيْهِ الرُّجُوعَ. The reason for this, that Allah lowers Himself to that rank, is He wants His creation to grow. He He wants man to grow. Again, if you see, there is a hadith of Qudsi, it's amazing. Says that Abdi bihaqqika alayhi, says my servant, by the right you have on me. And what right do we have on Allah? No right at all. He says, bihaqqika alayya anni uhibbuk. Says to man, by the right you have on me, the God, I love you. فَبِحَقِّي عَلَيْكَ أَحِبَّنِي. Says, by the right I have on you, you do love me. So the whole, the bases are based on love. And he wants us to grow, he demurs himself, he lowers himself to that position that he says that by the right you have on me, love me by the right I have on you. And this whole concept of mahabbat and love that we have can be seen in Quran. Says that in kuntum tuhibbun Allah fattabi'uni yuhibbukum Allah. That if your claim is that you love me, in kuntum tuhibbun Allah, you love Allah, fattabi'uni, be obedient to me. If you are obedient to Allah, yuhibbukum Allah, He too will love you. So it's a reciprocal relationship with Allah. Love Him, He will love you. And the same thing can be seen in the last moments of Imam Abdullah. And Hussein says that Ridan bi Ridak, that after every affliction, after every bala, every atrocity has fallen down upon Imam Abdullah, he says Ridan bi Ridak, that I am pleased with your pleasure. Tasliman li amri, that I submit to your command. La ma'budu siwak ya ghiyathal mustaghithin, there is no lord that can be worshipped apart from yourself. Ya ghiyathal mustaghithin, who helps or helps in every aspect. So the right belongs to Ahlul Bayt. And I think I did mention over here in one of these riwayat, when Prophet Yusuf was in the prison and he wanted his wish to be granted, he says to Allah, by the right my father has on you, ease this problem for me, grant this wish of mine. Immediately wahy is revealed, says, what right has your father got on me? What did he do for me? I gave him 11 sons, one of them went missing. He sat and stood, every meeting he went, he pleaded, he cried, and what right has he got? Says that if you want to ask something from me, and you want to swear, or you want to give me a right of someone, the teaching he teaches to Prophet Yusuf says that Allahumma inni as'aluka bihaqq Muhammadin wa Ali wa Fatima wal Hasani wal Husayn. Ask him that way. By the right Prophet has, by the right Amir Mu'mineen has, by the right Fatima possesses, by the right Hussain have, ask Allah through them to mediate for the wish to be granted. Now this is something again we find in Ziyarat Jamiat al-Kabira, in the last few phrases of it. See, says that فَبِحَقَّهِمُ الَّذِي أَوْجَبْتَ لَهُمْ عَلَيْكَ, that is, by the right of Ahlul Bayt, by the right of the Imams, that you have obligated them upon me. By them, this is the presentation I have. Through them, this is the mediation I need, and that is through them. So Allah, despite the hadith says that Abdi bihaqqika alayhi ahibbani, my servant, by the right that I have, by the right that you have upon me, love me. And for bihaqqi alayhi ahibbani, and I do will love you. So this unlimited love, it is present from Allah, the Barakah Ta'ala. awliya Allah, ma'sumin, they have a similar type of bond with us, with the creation. In both aspects, may that be in takween and may that be in tashreeh. There is this phrase in dua, in ziyarat jama, which says that وَالتَّامِينَ فِي مَحَبَّةِ اللَّهِ, that the a'imma, they are the most perfect creations fi mahabbatillah, when it comes to the love, when it comes to the devotion and mahabbat of Allah. And again, there is another ziyarat for Abu Abdullah. The phrase there says that wa iradatul Rabbi fi maqadiri umuri fi maqadiri umur tahbitu ilaykum wa tasturu min buyutikum. That it is that the intentions of Allah, that the intentions of the Lord in the destiny, in all these affairs, they descend to your house. وَتَسْبُرُ مِنْ بُيُوتِكُمْ, and from there it spreads. That is as if they are the distribution center. Whatever the intentions are, whatever he desires, whatever he wants, he sends it to them, and through them it is spread and it is distributed to every creation. That is the reason why we are said that we have to have a bond with them, a relationship with them. As a result of that, we can benefit from them. Again, this is in takween, that is in Genesis. In tashreeh, it is the same. Tashreeh, it is the ahkam, it is the rules that we have, it is the do's and the don'ts that we have. Over there, again, it's the same. For example, the right which a father has on his daughter, that is again just not out of the blue. He says that because he has a daughter, he has that right, and that right is given to him, and that right means a veto power. That is, a father can decide whether or not he wishes to wed his daughter with a person. Without that permission, she has committed a sin. Says even that permission that Allah has bestowed and given to her father, that is based on love. Because the parents, they have that immense love to their children, to the daughter in particular, the father has been given that veto power based upon the love that he has to the daughter, that he can use that veto power if he doesn't wish, or if he wishes his daughter to be married to someone. Now over here, there is, just in brackets, I'd like to mention that many times we get phone calls that children, they say that may God curse our parents. Why? See, that when it comes to the marriage of the girls, they say, wait, finish your studies first. High school, colleges, universities. And they say that at that time when we are young, we get many proposals. But because of the parents and we listen to them, the time passes, we get older, and then we don't get good proposals. And now that we get old, no one comes to us, we cannot marry anyone. Or if we do get to marry someone, it's going to be a big age difference. Or we have to accept someone with excess baggage. He has children and I have to take care of them. So, the age of getting married, Allah has kept an age for the boys and for the girls. And if that age passes, it becomes tough. From both sides, for the girls and for the boys. But the girls become very picky. They want someone who has a very set and a settled life. The boys also become very picky. They want someone who has a good smile, doesn't have big ears, so on and so forth. And all these are big things that you find. And yeah. And I came across many, many, many of these issues. And when you send the photos to them, they said, when she smiles, all of her teeth are showing. We want someone who shows lesser teeth, etc. Now the reason behind that is not, it's the reason behind that is because that age, as it passes and a person grows older and older, they are after more and more excuses. And many a times, even many of the Maraji today, one of them is Ayatollah Rizma Sheikh Hussain Ansar, Hussain Madahiri. He is of an opinion that when it comes to marriage, you don't need an istikhara at all. And when you call them for an istikhara, they say, is it for a divorce? If it's for a divorce, we won't do it. If it's for a wedding, we won't do it. And again, another point to be that we have to have in our minds, and that is for the spouses, for either of them to be settled, and only then we will get them wedded, that is a wrong concept. And if you analyze the word of Allah, the ayat of Allah, we find that we have no aqidah and iman in them. As a result of that, such ideas come to our mind. Quran says that in yakunu fuqara'a yughnihimu Allah, that you just get married. If you are poor, Allah will make you rich. So that is something that we have to have in mind, and that is, there are just some basic criteria for the boy and for the girl. First of them is that they have to be mutadayyin. If they are mutadayyin and you get a right spouse, let him go or let her go. So these are issues. Now again, the father who has this veto power on the girl, it is based on that love. If that love doesn't exist, then she's free. Now because he possesses that love, and based upon that, Allah has asked him that he has that right. And again, when Ahlul Bayt possess a right, that right is based on that love. Because they have that immense love to the creation of Allah, and for that, he says he has given them this right. Or because of that. So all these rights that we have throughout the community, they are all based on that. Or when mu'mineen have right on other mu'mineen, again, the riwayah, they say that because they are a franchise of that right of imam, of that wilayat of imam. Because each mu'min, he is a franchise himself of that wilayat of imam. Now, because he is a branch of that wilayah, other mu'mineen also have to abide by him. That is all based upon love, that Allah says. Like a father, a person, he comes to our eighth Imam Rida alayhi salatu wasalam. And says that, why is the Prophet called Abul Qasim? He says he had a son. For that reason he was called Abul Qasim. He says that answer is acceptable for everyone. But if you think I can understand and grasp more, let me know why. Is he known as Abul Qasim? And then Imam says, Amir al-Mu'mineen, he is Qasim al-Nari wal-Jannah. That Imam Ali is the distributor of the hell and the heaven. And the Prophet raises Amir al-Mu'mineen. So when he can be Qasim al-Nari wal-Jannah, I am Abul Qasim, I am his father. So how Imam twists and brings about that simple question of Abul Qasim to that point. So that is, in Majma' al-Bayan, says that when the Prophet saw that his invitation, people are not accepting it, among all the creation of Allah, among all the Prophets, there is no one who served like Rasulullah. No one at all. Now when he serves, when he gives and delivers the message of Allah to the people and they don't accept, like the other Prophets, he would have just went away. But he did not. Over here what he does is that he increases his servitude, his worship, his ibadah, so says that maybe there is a fault in me that people they are not accepting. He puts himself in trouble, worships more, cries more, weeps more, so that people may accept his work. Quran ayah is revealed. Taha anzalna alayka al-Quran litashqa. That don't put yourself into so much of burden. And then when it comes to the time when Rasulullah is to give away his life, is to die, there Jibreel, he comes and says that the hereafter, everything is waiting for you, just waiting for you to come. And then Rasulullah says, I don't care, what have you brought for my nation? That is that immense love which the Prophet possesses. And then he comes up with this ayah and says that وَلَسَوْفَ يُعْطِيكَ رَبُّكَ فَتَرْضَى, that because of that immense love you have for your nation, for your people, Allah will give you so much in abundance so that you are pleased. So that again is based on that love which Rasulullah, he possesses for his nation. And that too is based upon that same love and bond and mercy which Allah has for his creation. So in kuntum tuhibbuna Allah fattabi'uni yuhibbukum Allah. That if your claim is that you love God, you have to be obedient to Him. Only then will that claim be truthful. As it was mentioned the other day, we just can't just talk about Iman and Iman and Iman, and we don't know anything about Kufr. We have to know about Kufr. Only then can we understand what Iman is. You have to know what black is. Only then you can understand what white is. A person has to know what Noor is. Only then he can understand what Zulmat is. Just a biased understanding of Noor and black and white and Haq, that is of no use. So whenever Rahman is said, Shaitan must be understood. We have a very valid topic, and that is Ma'rifatun Nafs, that is a person has to know himself. That is, the enemy inside us has to be known. A'da aduwaka nafsaka allati bayna jambayk, that the worst of all your enemies is that enemy which is inside yourself, and that has to be known. So when that enemy in us is known, the enemy in the exterior, it can be easily understood, it can be easily known. If you look into this whole tragedy of Karbala, that too, it's amazing. Says that Hilal bin Nafir, one of the ashab of the Imam on the eve of Ashura, he finds that Abu Abdullah and Hussein, he's walking behind the tents. Hilal meets him. Imam says to Hilal, Hilal, you see those mountains there? Says, yes, ya Imam. Says, you can just go away. It's safe over there. You can run away. And no one will find out that you have fled away from here. He says that all my life I've been waiting to get an opportunity. I've been preparing my horse, my ride, and my sword so that I get an opportunity to serve you. And now that this opportunity has knocked my door, do you want me to flee away? I will not. I will stay with you until the last moment. Now again, the teaching over here that we get from Abdullah Hussein is that he wants his associates to be pure in every aspect. Not the faintest desire and want for Jannah or Akhirah to be with them. He wants to purify them totally. That if they have accepted the Imam, it's not for paradise, it's for the Imam himself. Because a group of people are being presented for the entire creation, they should be second to none. And they are second to none. Or when you see Sa'id bin Abdullah Halafi, he was shot with 11 spears on the day of Ashura. Now what he did, that when it was time for Salah and Abu Abdullah Hussein offers his prayers, he stands before Imam Hussein as a shield to protect the Imam. 11 poisonous spears hit him, and by the time Imam finishes his prayers, it's not a lengthy, it's a long four of the prayer, it's Salatul Khawf, which has to be done quickly, fast. And in that fast prayers which the Imam performs, by the time he finishes the salah, he collapses. Sa'id bin Abdullah collapses. And is in the arms of Abu Abdullah Hussein, arms of mercy, rahmatul lil alamin. Now what does this Sahabi say? Says, Awafaytu ya Abu Abdullah? Have I been loyal to you, ya Abu Abdullah? Says, Naam. Wa anta amani fil jannah. Yes, you have been loyal to me, and you will be with me. Now this hadith is normally misinterpreted. Anta amami. Anta means you. Amam means in front. Imam means in front of me. Fil Jannah, in the paradise. Whence it has to be said that you are with me in the paradise. Because Imam is an Imam, everywhere is an Imam. No one can be before the Imam, in front of the Imam. Imam is in front all the time. Even in today, if you go to the shrine of one of the A'imma and you were to say your prayer and you stand ahead of the Imam, your salat is batil. Because Imam has to be first. Imam has to be foremost. Over here it says that Anta amami fil Jannah, that you will be with me. That is, you will be by me. That is, the barriers, there will be barriers even in the hereafter. It is not as such that all the barriers, bars will be lifted and a person will have a crystal clear and a frequent contact with Masumeen. No. Even then, the riwayat, they say that people will be as such that to meet Masumeen in the paradise, they will have to wait for 400, 500, 600, 700 years. Only then will an opportunity will be given to them for that visitation of the Imam to be granted. Now here Imam says, Anta amani fil Jannah, that is, there's going to be a frequent access. You will have to me, I will be with you at all times. You are before me in the paradise that is between me and you. There will be no barrier, there will be no hijab, there will be no limitation. So, in the paradise, says that the best desire will be not food and drink, but meeting the Imam, meeting Masumeen, and in particular, just a glance of Abu Abdullah Hussein. And says that if Prophet Yusuf, when he appeared before the women of Misr, they cut their hands. Says that when Prophet Yusuf will see the beauty of Abu Abdullah Hussein, he will faint. That is going to be the desire of Mu'mineen in the hereafter, that a look at Abu Abdullah Hussein, which will be granted to them after 600-700 years of waiting. But like Sa'id bin Abdullah Hanafi, for them these 600-700 years, these barriers will not be there. Says, Anta amami fil Jannah. You will be with me in the paradise. Why? The reason for that is they were selfless. There did not exist in their heart anything but the love for Abu Abdullah Hussein. As a result of that, now many a time you find that majalis, when they are held at far distances, and it's tough for us to get there. And sometimes you find that you have your own busy schedule and you can't get there, although you want to. Or your car, all of a sudden, it breaks down. How come you get to that point? How come you get to that majlis? Riwayat say that although your intentions were to get to there, but for whatever reason, it wasn't possible for you to get there, and all of a sudden you get there. It's the angels who bring you here. Because that majlis is an important majlis. A majlis of ma'rifah. A majlis for Hussein is not an ordinary majlis. A majlis for Hussein that has great value. Anything connected to Hussein is great. Now the tears that shed out of our eyes, they are not worth at all. Now that tear is worth because it's connected to Hussein. That sajda in that report says that it enlightens the earth, the seven levels of it, it's because it's connected to Allah Hussein. So anything that connects to him, it gains weight. Or the immense love which Masumeen have to the creation of Mu'mineen in particular, it was mentioned with Ali ibn Mahziyar, says that when after 20 years of waiting, he gets to the presence of the 12th Imam, the first thing Imam says, قَدْ كُنَّا لَتَوَقَّعُكَ لَيْلًا وَنَهَارًا, that we've been waiting for you. That Masum was waiting for us day and night. And then says, why were you late all this time? And it was mentioned the other day that Shaykh Najib ibn Tayyar, when he, at the age of 25, when he starts offering his prayers and he says, Assalamu alayka ayyuhan nabiyyu wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh, says it was as if I said that salam in the presence of Rasulullah. And the first thing Rasulullah said to me, that when I said my salam to him, he said that, why are you so late? Why have you come after 25 years? When that access is always welcome, or that love, or that bond of mahabbat from Allah is open, we have to set ourselves, we have to set the transmission so that we benefit from the presence of Ma'sumin, and in particular the presence of Abu Abdullah Hussein and the Imam of Tahir. So, the basis of love have been created from Allah, they have been created from Ma'sumin, and also we have to do the same. If you look into Ziyarat Ashura, says Musibatan ma'adamaha wa'adama raziyyataha fil Islam wa fi jami'a samawati wal ard. But the afflictions, according to Imam Sadiq and the Masa'if, which his grandfather, which is Amir al-Mu'mineen, saw after Rasulullah, and when the house of Wahi was attacked, we have a phrase which is amazing. Says that, although Ziyarat Ashura says that Ashura was tough, the Masa'if which downpoured upon Abu Abdullah were great, but what unfolded upon the house of Wahi is Adha wa Amar. It's much bitter and it's much tougher. Why is that? And again, Riwayat, they say that مَا قُتِلَ الْحُسَيْنِ إِلَّا فِي سَقِيفَ. That it wasn't as such that Imam Hussein was killed on the day of Ashura, no. Ma'soom says that he was killed in Saqifa, that is, after Rasulullah, when he passed away, and when that meeting was held in that office, and whoever was appointed says that it was as if Hussein was killed there. And there is another hadith, it says that بِأَبِي مَنْ أَسْجَرُهُ يَوْمَ الْإِثْنَيْنِ, that my father, he was killed on that Monday. That is, that day when that imamat was usurped, was seized away from its rightful owner, which is Amir al-Mu'mineen. So, first of all, the masa'ib seen by the house of Wahi, Imam says, Adha wa Amad, are much bitter and much tougher. Oh. And again, if you see, we just recited Ziyarat al-Nahiyya, over there says that tudinu tarafan khafiyyan ila rahlika wa baytik, that Imam, when he had fallen down, he sees right and he sees left. What does he see? He wants to see what the household is like. Are they safe? Says that in the dua that we recite on that day of Ashura, when Abu Abdullah Hussein, he delivers his khutbah, he says that وَيْحَكُمْ يَا شِيَاتَ عَلَى أَبِي سُفْيَانَ, that shame upon you, O followers of Abi Sufyan, إِنْ لَمْ يَكُمْ لَكُمْ دِينَ, if you don't have deen, if you don't have faith, وَكُنْتُمْ لَا تَخَافُونَ الْمَعَادِ, and you don't fear the resurrection and the day of judgment, فَكُونُوا أَحْرَارًا فِي دُنْيَاكُمْ, be free men in this dunya. وَرْجِعُوا إِلَىٰ أَحْسَابِكُمْ إِنْ كُنْتُمْ عُرْبًا, says that you turn back to your calculations if you are Arabs. What does that mean? Say that don't come close to my household. My women, my children, don't come near them. And he says, okay, I will abide by that. I won't touch them. Look back into that history again. Imam says that what unfolded on that house of Wahi, Adha wa Amar, it's bitter, it's tough. And it is bitter, it's tough. Abu Abdullah Hussein, he never saw his wife and children beaten up. Amir al-Mu'mineen saw that. So it's tough. That Ma'soom says, Adha wa Amar, it's bitter and it's tough. We We have all gathered today to mourn about the Abul Fadl al-Abbas, the son of Amir al-Mu'mineen, and this loyal son of Amir al-Mu'mineen. In the ziyarat that we have for him, we say that Ashhadu annaka bit-tasneem, Ashhadu laka bit-tasneem, wat-tasdeeq, wal-wafa wal-nasiha. That Abul Fadl al-Abbas, I bear witness. What is that? That you submitted with tasneem. Then tasdeeq, you were truthful. And then wal-wafa, your loyalty, we witness. We bear witness and we give testimony to your loyalty. Wal-nasiha, and the advice. And again, it's amazing that on that eve of Ashura, when Abu Abdullah Hussein, he puts off that light and says, leave to everyone. No one leaves, no one evacuates. And then each one stands up and gives a lecture, has a word to say. One of them says that, Imam, I won't leave. One of them says that if I am killed the worst killings 1,000 times, sliced into 1,000 pieces, brought back to life again, and killed in the worst way again, we will be with you. Each one of them said something. Imam addresses Abul Fadl al-Abbas, says, what have you to say? Not a word did he utter. Silence, submission. And that was the wafa, the loyalty which Abul Fadl al-Abbas possesses for his brother. That all of it, that four of his, of the brothers that are the sons of Umm al-Bani, they are present on that day of Ashura, and all four of them are killed. And again, this loyalty just doesn't come out of the blue. After Hazrat Zahra salamullah alayha, when Amir al-Mu'mineen marries Umm al-Bani, she says that I cannot take the place of Zahra. Impossible. I've been her slave and I am a slave now as well. And the loyalty which she has, the sincerity which she possesses, is what is transferred to her sons. And again on that day, when the caravan comes back to Medina, and then she is informed, the first one to give that message is Hazrat Zainab. She says, Zainab, tell me what about Karbala? What happened in Karbala? She wants to give the message. Now whenever you want to give a message of someone who has passed away, you just beat around the bush and give the information in a way so that the person who's getting the message is hurt least. She doesn't say Abul Fadl has done. She says, Karbala, it was such and such. What unfolded, what atrocity. She says, tell me what happened. Says, your sons, one after the other, they were killed, they were murdered. Say, tell me about my son Hussein. The four sons, I don't care. I want to know what happened to my sons. And that is what has been transferred to the sons. Now the loyalty which Abul Fadl possesses, it's amazing that the task given to him is to be the associate of his brother. And on that 21st of Ramadan, when Amir al-Mu'mineen is reciting his wasiyah, he calls his children and says that after me the Imam of time is Imam al-Mujtaba, my son, and gives the hand of each one of his children into the hands of Imam al-Mustafa. And there, Abul Fazl is left alone. Umm al-Baneen comes forward, says that, what is wrong? What has he done that his hand wasn't given in the hand of Fazl? And again, when Abul Fazl al-Abbas is gone, the first thing which Amir al-Mu'mineen does is kisses the arms of this baby. The mother, she is upset. She says that, is there anything wrong with the baby? Has he got a defect? Is he disabled that you are kissing his arms? The mom says, these arms are not defective. These are strong arms. And these are the arms that will serve my son Hussein on that day of my show. gives the hand of Abul Fazl al-Abbas into the hands of Hussein and says that on the day of judgment, I must not be ashamed, Abbas. You have to serve your brother. And on the day of Ashura, when the children, they are in need of water and they are said to go and fetch some water, he says, okay, I will do it. Goes to the ocean now. He himself is dehydrated, thirsty from so many days. And on that day, a tough day, a hot day, now someone who is so much desperate, so much thirsty by coming by the river, he will drink a few drops of it just to quench his thirst, says, I won't. The children are thirsty over there. My master is thirsty over here. Abbas, water and vessel. He fills the vessel, takes it and rushes, gallops back towards the tent. And those Bala'i, they hit his arm. He holds it with the other hand. Again, the other arm is amputated, holds it with his teeth, another arrow is shot, and this time he collapses. And when he collapses, Abdullah Hussein rushes towards Abu Fazl al-Abbas and says that, brother, when I was born, the first sight of my own face, but now that I have collapsed, I can't see you. One eye is an arrow in it, and the other eye is about 200-300 years ago, when the haram of Abu Abdullah Hussein was filled with water and they wanted to reconstruct it, the builder, the architect, takes him to the basement that was filled with water. This is something which is even present today, that Abul Fazl al-Abbas, who wanted to bring water to the camps, how come that water circulates around his brain despite everything has been so perfect? That water has come to his brain even today. Says that, is it not as such that the reports say that he was a big built person? If that was the case, then why is this grave so tiny? And Sayyid Banu Rumi beats his head and says that the reason for that grave to be so tiny is that he was nice and pleased and was buried in that way. Again, the Rahman which the Fazl al-Abbas possesses, it's amazing in this book, which you can see on the show, says that in one of these munasibat, when we pay our visits to the shrine of Abdullah Hussein on the day of Arba'een, says that, and it is a custom even today, that people, they pay that visit with bare feet. Hot day, and I had to carry some water, and think, because the caravans were leaving, I left without having water with me. Says Sayyid Qujani that when I come near Karbala and I was dehydrated and I had no water to drink, a person who is dehydrated, he walks fast. And I in need of water was rushing and walking fast. All of a sudden the clip of the day of Ashura opens before me and I see that it's an ambush. The camps are being burnt down, the children are being attacked, and everything is evident before me. And then he says that I was horrified at seeing the scene and I rushed to the haram of Abdullah Hussein. My feet were bleeding, I washed them. And it was 6 o'clock afternoon. He says that the clock started striking 6. And instead of that bell being heard from that clock, I heard the cry of Abu Abdullah Hussein saying, help me now, Sayyid Yansur. Is there anyone to help me, to assist me for 6 times? And says that I was shocked and amazed to see the loyalty of the haram of Abu Fazl al-Abbas, that over there again the clock strikes six. Instead of the bell, I hear la bay for 6 months. And I will not let you come. I am going with all of you. May Allah, the Lord of the Alam, hasten the